gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 16 of Truly Schmitty. And this week we are in the week of June 30th, 2015. I am in the studio today with my executive producer extraordinaire, Max Holiday, and once again my co-host, JT Simmons. And our last episode, we talked a lot about Blackhawks hockey. We talked a little bit of baseball concerning Bob Costas making a little statement for Pedro Strop. Talking a little White Sox with the situation with Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn. The White Sox are a god-awful mess right now. And the infighting of what's happening with the general manager and the vice president, whether or not Robin Ventura is going to make it through the season, which I hope that he just walks away because...
Infighting with a guy named Rick. Why am I not surprised? Sorry, little private joke between us here,
But looking at what we're seeing from the White Sox, it's turmoil. There's nothing good about this season. The only bright spots are Chris Sale and Jose Abreu. Chris Sale, I would pay to watch anytime. He's my favorite baseball player right now.
Guy's got probably one of, if not the best arm in Major League.
And he's 26 years old. He's a lefty. That's right there. That's a superstar. Somebody that's going to be around for a while. He's been really healthy for somebody they were worried about breaking down. I mean, he's in his sixth season now? Fifth season?
Five or six, something like that.
I think
that.
He came out 2011 was his first season. So, yeah, this would be his fifth. Well, whatever it is. He's been phenomenal, to say the least. And that's been a phenomenal thing for the White Sox. But other than that, there's nothing good on the South Side. It's sad if you're a fan of the White Sox right now.
It is beyond sad.
Talking about turmoil, we're going to go ahead and we're going to lead with this. This also has something to do with Chicago. There's a tie into Chicago for it. And one of my favorite baseball players from a kid, Ryan Sandberg, Hall of Fame second baseman for the Chicago Cubs. Even though I'm a diehard White Sox fan, Ryan Sandberg was the epitome to me of baseball.
He was probably the only thing good on the Cubs for a long, long time.
Right.
Him. I mean, he got how many All-Stars and Gold Gloves
ridiculous. MVP one season. He did it all. He played a really good second base defensively.
He hit. He was a good all-around player. He was one of those guys, and you know me, it's very rare will I ever give the Cubs credit for a goddamn thing, but they kept him pretty much the entire time. They were smart enough to realize, hey, we cannot lose this guy.
Right.
Or we're screwed.
Because not only as a player was he great, but like he was a true leader.
Let Andre Dawson go after a while, but they never let Sandberg go.
Because the one thing, the difference between Andre Dawson and Ryan Sandberg was, Sandberg was a leader on that team. Sandberg was a guy that he would get in your face if you messed up, but he'd also be there to teach you what you did wrong to fix it the next time. He was that guy. And with that, leading into what we're talking about, he was a longtime Chicago Cubs farm system manager. He worked his way up through AAA Iowa. He was expected to be the next manager in line before they signed Mike Quatty. That was the expectation, was that he was going to be brought up, and he wasn't. And immediately after that, he walked away from the Cubs. Philadelphia picked him up and made him their AAA manager with the intent of him taking over for Charlie Manuel, which is eventually what happened halfway through the 2013 season. What happened this week was Ryan Sandberg walked away from the Philadelphia Phillies. He just pretty much turned in his cards, said, I'm done. I can't take the losing. It's wearing on me.
He had how many seasons of losing when he played? I think he's tired of that as a manager.
True, but you know, when you take this job, your expectation is that it's not going to be all roses. And he took this team over knowing how bad they are. Because really think about it, the Phillies were great in the late part of the 2000, the 00 decade. From 08 to about 2011, they were the epitome of the National League. They had some great players. They were in the World Series. They won one World Series.
And before that, they hadn't been hot since the early 80s.
You look at really what that team was. You had Jimmy Rollins. You had Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Roy Halladay, Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee. The team was stacked, but the problem was all those guys were old. They were, you know, 27, 28 years old when they were winning then. Now you're talking almost 8 years later, and these guys are, what, they've really just gotten older.
The mileage catches up very, very fast.
Ryan Howard's been a strikeout machine since he came up, and now he's just older and slower. Chase Utley's older. Jimmy Rollins has been traded, which was the heart and soul of that team, and somebody that Sandberg didn't get along with. So now you're looking at a team that's pretty much a shell of itself. They've got a couple of okay players, but really it's not a team that's going anywhere. And Ryan Sandberg called it in. Here's a little bit of what he said. In a lot of ways, I'm old school, and I'm very much dissatisfied with the record and not pleased at all with that. I think that goes hand in hand with being a manager, so it's been a difficult thing to swallow. But I've thought about it for some time, and we've come to this day. The accumulation of losses was something that I take responsibility for, and something that really took a toll on me. My concern about this, and I love Rhino, he may never manage again. Walking away
from the sounds of it, he's blaming himself for most of it, which as a manager, a lot of that is your fault and it's your responsibility. If you're handed the pieces to the puzzle and you're expected to put the puzzle together, even if you're missing a few pieces, it's still your fault the puzzle's not together.
Well,
and I think he realizes that, like he said, he's very old school about that, and you know, he takes that, I think, maybe a little too personally, and you're right, I don't know if we'll see him again as a manager.
And another piece to this puzzle that...
But not every player transitions into a manager well.
But good things were expected from him as far as a manager because of the way that he handled players. Another piece to this puzzle that I haven't mentioned yet was former Chicago Cubs general manager Andy McPhail is actually going to be taking over as president of operations for the Philadelphia Phillies, which was been an expected move for a while now. And a lot of people feel that Sandberg saw the writing on the wall. Knew McPhail was coming in and he was going to be fired. What my opinion is, and what a lot of people think, is that if Rhino had dug it out, finished the season, or even if he didn't finish the season and they fired him midway through, he'd probably still be, at least a couple years from now, a candidate for jobs, but people now are going to kind of label him as a quitter. And maybe he doesn't care. He made a lot of money in his playing days, and maybe he doesn't need it anymore, and he's just going to go home and spend time with family. But if you're having a future in this game, you kind of got to be a little bit careful about that type of stuff.
Honestly, just the little bit I know, and I'm not a Cubs expert, it's not my team, but just the impressions I've gotten from all the years watching him as a kid and even watching him, you know, as a manager coming up through systems and stuff is I really don't think he was in it out there managing baseball for money. I really don't think the dollar signs of the contract are really all that important to him. Judging just from the little bits of interviews and quotes and stuff like that, I think he gives more of a crap about the game.
Right.
And if, like a lot of those guys from that era, you don't play to a certain level, you know, you're disappointed and you're upset with yourself. And he probably expected his managing to be, and I'm sure a lot of people besides himself expected his managing to be kind of almost on par with his playing.
Right.
And I think that was an unfair expectation from everybody, including himself. God knows I thought it. I thought, here's a guy, much like, you know, Ventura and Guillen, here's a guy who's played. He knows what it takes from that end.
Right.
And he'll be able to transition that over. That don't always work. That really don't always work.
And another thing that I...
Just because you know how to drive the truck don't mean you're going to be good in the front office of the building.
And kind of breaking off from that a little bit, going back to what we were talking about as far as the White Sox, another interesting thing that I had read and heard about today was, and this is something I didn't know, when Robin Ventura was hired as a White Sox manager, the initial intent wasn't for Robin Ventura to be the manager. What I actually heard was a little bit shocking and something that we hadn't seen for probably close to 30 years. The White Sox initially wanted Paul Konerko to be a player manager on the team. And that's something that you don't see much of anymore.
Yeah, and they originally hired Ventura for like hitting and fielding coaching and stuff.
Well, they brought him back almost as like a consultant and with the hope that they would bring him on to help out or whatever. It wasn't even like an official role when Reinsdorf asked him back. And the idea was they were hoping that Paulie would just take the job. And Paulie's like, I've been paid close to $100 million. Why do I need to do that? He's like, I'm going to go home and enjoy myself in Arizona. And I can't blame him.
He's earned that rest.
Paulie's been around for such a long time. But, and you look at it, they pretty much had to beg Ventura to take the job. Robin didn't really want the job when it was offered to him. He did it to help out Jerry because Jerry was loyal to him.
But he also saw how they treated Ozzy, another one of his friends, and, you know, saw how things kind of go that way. And I'll be surprised, honestly, if he makes it another season or two, because the Sox, I don't think, unfortunately, and again, I'm a diehard, I don't think we're going to be good for a couple years.
No, this team needs to be
blown up. And I think they're
going to
blame him, and he's...
Well, you know what? I don't even think they're going to blame him, because that's the one thing. We touched on this a little bit the last episode. Reinsdorf is loyal to a fault. I think eventually Robin's going to walk away. He's going to resign.
Or Kenny's going to cut him.
I don't think Kenny will do that. I don't think... Because that's the thing, is that Reinsdorf will step in on that. Because you look at all, the friction that Williams and Ozzie Guillen had, it took Ozzie Guillen doing some pretty nasty stuff for them to finally let him go.
That's very true.
And Reinsdorf is really a stickler for his coaches and his managers.
Ozzie Guillen was like the ultimate heel manager for baseball.
He really was. And that's the thing that, you know, you got to look at now is, where do they go next? There's not that hot managerial candidate out there right now. And how many people really want this job knowing that the trouble the White Sox are in? Like we talked a little bit about, the three pieces on this team that are really going to be mainstays, Rodon, Chris Sale, and Jose Abreu. Those guys aren't going anywhere. They're the forefront of this team. They're the faces of this team. They need a lot of help and a lot of places. And you look at other guys, Avisail Garcia in right field, very good player. Excited about his ceiling because I don't think we've come close to seeing it yet.
The Sox are just, they need a total overhaul in every area. They
really look at the infield needs with all three infield positions with the exception of first base. They need a new catcher. They need a new left fielder and a new center fielder.
They need a couple new catchers.
Yeah, well, really, yeah. Because the
catchers
catching,
don't last or work.
No, they don't. And none of the catchers that they've had have really been great defensively or offensively since AJ left. They were expecting a lot of good things from Tyler Flowers that never panned out. Nope. And, you know, hopefully we'll start to see something in the movement there where they get a good catcher coming up soon.
Before AJ, they hadn't had a good catcher since Fisk.
No, yeah, you look at it, not really. You had Karko, who wasn't great offensively, but could call a good game.
I say Karkovich was a good defensive catcher, but he couldn't
hit
to save
his life. Yeah, couldn't
hit
the ball
worth
a lick. And that was really, you've got to have a really special catcher to be able to do both of those things. But I'm going to go ahead and remind everybody that you are listening to the Truly Schmitty Show. This is episode 16 for the week of June 30th, 2015. And you can listen to us at hpn247.com and hpn.listen2myradio.com. And you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow my executive producer, Max Holiday, at Holiday Special on Twitter. Myself, my personal Twitter is Jacob_H_Schmidt and the new Truly Schmitty Twitter at Truly Schmitty. And you can also email the show at trulyschmitty@gmail.com. So those are all the ways you can reach out to us. We're also usually when we record, we are on Periscope. So you could also come in. You could ask questions to us live in the studio and we'll try and do our best to answer them. If you got anything you want to talk about, you hit us up on
Periscope. If I'm ever back in here, that could be a fun night. Email your questions for JT and watch you get flooded with like 20 million rat questions. JT, what do you do when you get this rat that won't leave?
I'll go ahead and let everybody know after tonight's show that we're doing, we're also going to be doing an interview with JT Simmons. That'll be airing in the later weeks of July. I will be out of town for 3 weeks doing starting my new career. So we'll have some interviews in, and JT is going to be one of them. And I guarantee, as we've seen with all my other interviews, JT will be back in the studio for a follow-up interview because something tells me we're not going to get very far in the career of JT Simmons tonight.
Well, depends on how you want to look at it. The career will cover in about maybe 10 minutes. The other crap and the other shit, that might be all night.
That's very true. But we're going to get back and do what we do best here at Truly Schmitty. Well, maybe not what we do best, but it's what we do. It's what I was kind of brought on board to do. Talk a little bit of sports. And we've talked about it all today. We've talked about hockey. We've talked about baseball. Football's kind of at a dead point right now. We've got about a month and a half until training camps open up, and I'll be working right by the training camp, so I'll be stopping by.
As long as it's not the fucking Packers, I don't give a shit.
Right. We're going to talk a little bit of Chicago Bulls. And this week was a big week in the NBA. NBA draft week was always a huge event. Also, the beginning of free agency starts in a day. July 1st is when the deals are up. Players can start talking.
Maybe they can dump Derrick Rose before his knee blows out again.
Derrick Rose isn't going anywhere, sad to say.
They need to get rid of his ass.
That's one of the things with NBA contracts are fully guaranteed, and there won't be too many teams that would be willing to take on that salary.
But, well, no, because his knees keep blowing out.
Well, you know what, though? I'd like to see if he could stay healthy this year. What he played last year, he played pretty well. He wasn't a superstar like he was before. He played okay, but...
It's a big if. Ifs are like wishes, and if wishes were horses, we'd all be eating steak.
What I saw from Rose was promising to an extent. It's going to be bated breath to see if he can make it through a full season, or even if he could play 72 of 82 games, I'd be ecstatic.
I'd be surprised if he plays 20 out of 82 games.
We'll see. And that's just, that's.
I have a longer shelf lifespan in the NBA.
And, looking at that right now, the NBA, we're going to go ahead. We'll talk a little bit about, Chicago Bulls, and we're going to talk about Chicago Bull Hall of Famer. We're talking about a guy that I
know where we're going with this.
That was a top 50 player when the NBA had their 50th anniversary.
I would say he was in the top 50 for that. I'd say he's in the top 25. I mean, really.
He was
all around.
Right, all around player. We're talking about points, but all around. What we're talking about is Scottie Pippen.
He was on the Olympic Dream Team, right?
He was. He was actually on two Olympic teams, I believe.
Yes.
He played on the 96 team as well.
Yeah. Not many people did that.
No. And
to say one of the best of all time is a pretty fitting shoe, yes?
While he wasn't one of the elite scorers, he wasn't, you know, as epic as Jordan, he was, without Pippen, they're not winning the six championships.
Yeah, no. Jordan and Pippen together were like heads and tails of the coin.
Right.
I mean, obviously Jordan was the more important of the two, but that's not to say that Pippen wasn't important, because without either of them, that team wouldn't have
flown. Well, you look at the two seasons that Jordan was gone, Pippen was a near, was an MVP candidate, was a very good player, all-star both seasons. When Jordan came back in the 94-95 season, they nearly beat Orlando, who eventually went on to become the Eastern Conference representative in the finals. Right. But what we're talking about is Scottie Pippen talking about the current greatest player in the NBA, LeBron James. And this is quoting him. "I was LeBron James before LeBron James." Pippen expanded upon his thoughts, saying, "Usually left out of the conversation when observers compare James to those who came before him. Most comparisons are between Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson." I'm not going to go into everything that he said because it's a long-winded rant, but in essence, Pippen's right.
Pippen was totally right.
I think the fact that he is bringing this up, where he brought it up and the way he did it, he brought it up in Northeastern Ohio, Cleveland Cavaliers country. He brought it up to get a rise out of people.
He did.
But I don't say he's wrong, because he really was that. He didn't have the scoring numbers that LeBron did. And he wasn't as big as LeBron was as far as size, as far as body build. He was a very skinny player, but he went out there 17 points a game for his career, 18 points a game for his career, 6 assists, 5 rebounds a game. He was really what LeBron is. Still, there's always going to be that controversy.
Well, I honestly don't even see what the damn big deal is. Everyone always compares the greatest of all time, regardless of sport. I mean, you look at boxing. You were back in the day, it was like, oh, how would Ali fare against Tyson, or how would, you know, how would Rocky Marciano have fared against, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson? There's always going to be the comparisons of the great. What would it be like if the Hulk Hogan back in his prime wrestled Steve Austin in his prime? There's always going to be the speculation of who's the best, who's that. Looking at the numbers, just on a straight numbers-wise, and again, I'm not a basketball guy. I haven't followed since the 90s Dream Team era. And even then, I wasn't a basketball player, I was a hockey player, so... But I followed as best as I could. It was a great time to watch any professional sport.
Oh yeah.
But you know, like you said, Pippen's numbers, the two seasons without Jordan, he was one of the top guys in the NBA period. Mm-hmm. He played on both Olympic Dream Teams back then. I mean, that's an exceedingly difficult challenge to have done, and he did it. His numbers consistently, even when he played with Jordan, were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodman had made a similar comment, but that doesn't get up the play. It was basically the extent of, LeBron James is great for now, but LeBron James can't hold a candle to those guys back then. LeBron James can't hold a candle to, you know, Scottie Pippen, because Scottie Pippen, numbers-wise, pretty much was LeBron James, with the exception of the points, which he's not as high, but Scottie Pippen didn't get the ball that much to score because almost 90% of the time it went over to Jordan, and Jordan did the scoring.
Right.
And LeBron, or it went over to Paxson for the three-pointers, right. Or it went, you know.
And for the most part with LeBron, he really, when he's playing, he's more of a facilitator, and he gets his points when other guys start going. When he's passing the ball, getting guys like J.R. Smith open, getting Kevin Love open for shots, or Kyrie Irving, when those guys start hitting, they tend to lay off LeBron. LeBron's able to go in and get his points. But
yeah, he's very good, very smart right. player. I'm not knocking him on that. But again, Rodman, you know, Rodman said, you know, if you put not Derrick Rose, he wouldn't last 2 seconds. But if you put LeBron James in with the guys back in the 90s during the Rodman era, you know, Patrick Ewing, Charles Barkley, you know, Robinson, all the guys that were in Space Jam for crying out loud, right. The Olympic Dream Team. I mean, you know, all those guys, Magic Johnson, Stockton, Malone. Every one of those guys. Hell, even Kobe Bryant wouldn't last against those guys. And I'm sorry, Kobe's a better player than LeBron.
Well, what I'll say here is that I feel that Kobe Bryant, he's a better scorer. He's, if you want to do a comparison,
he's a better team leader. He's
well, he's more of a vocal leader than LeBron. And LeBron's picked that up a little bit. Kobe is more along the lines of Jordan, where he is fierce to a point where he does. He just recently came out a quote basically saying that friends are part-time, banners hang forever. Basically saying that, you know, yeah, I could have all the friends in the world, but those championships are going to be my legacy.
Right, and he's right to an extent.
It's the same, but the
you can win the championships or you can have your friends.
Right.
Well, if I'm in this career to make money and win championships, it behooves me more to worry about this. Right. I can have my friends outside of basketball,
right?
And I got that covered.
And that's the, I think one of the things that we always have issues with when we're going with these basketball comparisons is cross-generationally, there's no way to check that. Maybe if LeBron was brought up in the same era that Jordan was, you know, at the size that he was, maybe he would have been a great player. The LeBron James of right now probably wouldn't have been able to hang and bang with these guys.
Right, no, absolutely.
He's not, who's
the greatest of all time comparisons, you know.
Right.
Would Mickey Mantle have hit as well in the modern day right. MLB? Probably not.
Right.
The pitchers are way faster or far more accurate than they ever were back when Mantle was playing.
Babe Ruth, because you look at Babe Ruth now, he's not going to be a Major League Baseball player.
He wouldn't be able to touch the pitchers.
He was built like me.
And he was drunk half the time.
Right.
But the fact that he could do all that drunk and lit up off his ass, exactly. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Right. And that just goes to show you, you know, every generation.
Tyson Ali. You know, Ali's the greatest of all time, but how many fights did Ali fucking lose?
Right.
Before he won the big right. titles and stuff. And even then, he kept fighting after he should have stopped and kept losing fights. Would Ali have lasted against Tyson? No, probably not. Tyson was a far better athlete in his prime.
Absolutely.
Tyson was untouchable. It was Tyson's right. management and personal life that made him lose all the crap. If he'd have had stuff in order, Tyson would have still been the king.
Oh, absolutely.
Johnny Draven is tuning in via Periscope and saying that Jordan never needed a Game 7.
That is also very true.
Thank
Johnny
you, Mr.
Draven.
Draven.
That is very true.
And I'm not, believe me, I'm not trying to draw the comparison directly Jordan and LeBron, because I don't think that's a comparison that could be made.
There's always going to be the cross-generational comparisons.
Right.
Well, what if these guys played in this era, these guys played in that era? Would a modern day, you know, would LeBron James last in the 90s NBA? Probably not.
The same question could be asked.
Not that he wouldn't play in the NBA, because there were guys, you know, there were guys on the Bulls that played with Jordan and them when they won all six trophies that I can't remember their goddamn name.
The sad thing is I probably remember the whole team. But
I don't remember who they are, but they were there, they played, and they made money. Would LeBron have been in the NBA at his size with his skill level? Absolutely. Would he have been on the Dream Team or the All-Star teams? Probably not.
But
I guarantee you he wouldn't have been in Space Jam.
The thing that's said now is that you look at the athletes in this generation are so much better because the fact that science has helped them been able to improve. LeBron James is a freak of nature. He's a tight end playing basketball. And that's where the difference is, that science has been able to help grow athletes to be bigger than what they were.
Sports conditioning and training now. Even when you go to like high schools, I graduated high school in 1996, which shows how exceedingly old I am.
I was only 3 years behind you.
And high school athletes now, like when I was in school, our athletes were some of the top in the country.
Right.
And we couldn't hold a candle to some of the crap and training these kids go through now. And I'm going, you're 15 years old and you can hit a 95 mile an hour. What the? How is that even possible? But they can do it. Because they're trained and they work harder. And they're worked harder through... But they're worked harder from a scientific aspect, even though it might not seem like it personal-wise.
Right. Yeah, because they're able to train differently where they're not killing themselves. Right. They're getting more effective workouts. The scary thing is, size-wise, do you want to know who the most comparable player, superstar player of the era was in LeBron's size?
David Robinson, right?
No. Because LeBron's 6'8", Robinson was 7'1".
Okay. I say Robinson was big.
Karl Malone.
Karl Malone would have shut LeBron down.
Karl Malone was freaking amazing.
He was awesome, but Karl Malone was a two-dimensional player. Karl Malone was somebody that could rebound and defend, and he was a great post player with a decent jump shot. Speed-wise, it's just you're looking at just from a size and speed. LeBron 6'8", 250, and can run like crazy. Malone, while he was fast for his time, just doesn't have that same athletic ability. And I'm not trying to draw comparisons style-wise and who could beat who, because Malone, they play different games, they play different positions realistically.
Yeah. Well, but see, Malone also, like you said, he's a defensive player, whereas right. LeBron's an offensive player. So if anybody's going to shut down a LeBron James, it's going to be a defensive player like Malone. Malone held his own against Jordan and some of the all-time greatest of them all defensively.
But you look at it, they never played.
In an era where they were better.
He didn't play Jordan one-on-one. That's the thing that you have to look at, and that's where I'm looking at it from. Where really the biggest comp that you have is where this conversation started, Scottie Pippen. And that's what Scottie Pippen was. Scottie Pippen, for everything that we talk about, his stats, the scoring and whatever, he was their defensive heart. Jordan was an all-defensive player. Pippen was the all-defensive captain of that team. When it came to defense, Pippen could shut down four positions.
True.
He could shut down everything from a point guard to a power forward because he was athletic and he was strong enough to be able to hang with those guys if they were playing a smaller lineup. And he was a guy that could defend LeBron or somebody like a LeBron in his prime because he was fast enough. Maybe size-wise he wasn't comparable, but at least he'd be able to keep his speed in check and wouldn't let him get to the holes like these players do now, because there's nobody in the NBA that's able to do that. Kevin Durant, 6'10". He's 210 pounds. He's skinny. I mean, LeBron beats him around.
210 pounds is not that skinny. I'm sorry.
For six foot ten.
All right, I suppose that's basically me at that height.
Right, like us. All right, like
fair
us,
enough. I'll give you that's a JT that's, at that at 6 foot right, ten. I'll give you
I
that.
Mean, that's what we're looking at.
I'm a skinny son of a bitch.
You're looking
I know
at LeBron. It. He's 6'8" and 250. That's just solid beef. And you're looking at some like his comp right now is Kevin Durant. To be that defensive stopper and to be one of the greatest players and be that defensive stopper. And it's just size-wise, there's no comparisons there.
I think ultimately, though, it really does boil down to Pippen's, right? It's, look, you know, the problem is, and I think maybe this might be Scottie Pippen being bitter, is, you know, LeBron gets all these praises for being how great he is, and I'm not knocking his stats or abilities.
Right.
Pippen never got all that, but then again, look at all the guys Pippen had to play with. Pippen was out there with, you know, forgetting Jordan and Rodman. He was also out there with Patrick Ewing, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson for a while, Larry Bird. He was out there with, like, the all-time who's of basketball. And he put up those freaking numbers.
Right. And that's what we're looking at now, because really, the talent, while there's more parity in talent, there's not as much of that upper echelon, the true guys that you
the would, blue chips, yeah. No.
Exactly. You don't have the Shaqs, you don't have the Robinsons, the Jordans, the Malones, the Kemps, the Paytons. Those guys just aren't there. But, you know, I didn't get to bring up what I wanted to talk about today a little bit, and I guess we'll have to just wait till next week and we'll get to the NBA draft because we're just about done. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 16, and for all of my viewers on Periscope, thank you for watching in.
Johnny Draven.
Thank you, Mr. Draven.
Thank you, Johnny.
On behalf of my executive producer extraordinaire and my co-host, JT Simmons, I would like to thank you and make sure that you stay tuned and make sure that you listen during July, because we will have interview month and it's going to be JT Simmons, Damian Tyler, and Mojo McQueen. So thank you very much and have a great evening.
Pinkies raised.